Hi, folks. Namum Myoho Renge Kyo. Just a brief video on something that comes up almost cyclically in our practice. We study, we read about, we hear about our practice through words, either in books. You've heard me talk about the translation bias of authors and, very earnest scholarship. But there's something that is very, I don't know that we can escape from it at all. I was going to say it's very difficult for humans to escape, but I think that it's built in to the samsaric mechanisms of life. The question that I pose is, our brain sleeping? Brain itself is indicative of body, of samsaric existence. And as we've discussed, our brains are like a vast Dewey Decimal Library system. We're constantly cataloging everything, identifying distinctions and particularities, and we put things in boxes. And I mean, this is in the language we use to even talk about how the brain works, right? But as much as we are aware of our categorizing and putting things in boxes and so forth, I think it's important to realize that we're doing that about a billion times a minute. It's just a constant process, right? And so, picture a massive post office that has these packages flooding in, but a limited amount of employees who can run around and move these categories of categories of categories of categories into identifiable spaces. I don't think it takes long, if you try to visualize that, before you can start to see just massive mountains of packages of thoughts. And what happens as humans when we're confronted with that kind of a plethora of information, a plethora of anything, we tend to see what's closest to us, what's most familiar. We'll take whole groups of thoughts and we'll go, well, that's that. And we'll label that in a way that makes sense to us at that point in time. And 10 years from now, that reference may be completely wrong or completely other or completely not factual to the information that we have now. I'm trying to illustrate that we have inculcated beliefs, inculcated understandings from vast amounts of information that we've long ago categorized and put into cubbyholes that may be incorrect. But we don't look to correct that old information. We just operate off of it. And we make new judgments, albeit new judgments, but from the old information, which may be completely incorrect. This is what it means. And when I talk about epistemology, that's what I'm referring to, is those deeply buried assumptions. Assumptions because they may have seemed factual at the time, but they were built of a rudimentary understanding at that time. And unaware in our minds, our human minds, our samsaric brain, is the fact that those assumptions may no longer apply. And this is why it seems as though, as human beings, we only grow leaps and bounds in understanding through traumatic events. It's like an earthquake in the brain that rattles some of those boxes back down on the floor. And when we go to reorganize them, we see them more clearly and we go, oh, that shouldn't be here. That should be there. Oh, this isn't valuable anymore. Toss that. For us to reevaluate our assumptive mind is not a regular daily activity, although it can happen that way. We call those insights, right? So what I mean by the brain sleeping is that a lot of our thinking is just kind of lazily, awkwardly lumbering forward while this surface interaction with the world and our minds, our thinking, current thinking minds, is happening out here and assuming this base without really evaluating this base. And so I think all of that is to say that when we study, and this has come up lately because I talk a lot about language and translation bias, cultural bias, we all have it. It's part of a forming human, right? We have basic assumptions, and we can all read the same sutra or the same paragraph or the same gosho or the same, hell, we can read the same recipe for an excellent carrot cake. And even though everything's listed out and it seems as though, well, just follow the directions, there are assumptions we're making as we read those same directions that you and I are going to sense, going to use, going to implement, going to understand differently. Some of us will be acutely aware of the salt content in the recipe, even if it isn't listed as an ingredient specifically, coming in other forms. Others of us just go, ooh, I don't know if I have any of that. And we won't be able to substitute anything for it because that is specifically what we need. It's a loose analogy, but I think this is what happens throughout history as very well-meaning translators of ancient texts in other languages are battling. And that battle is so intense that when their own biases creep into the translation, they just take it as a given. And this is where their own cultural, their own lives bias understanding of the experience of life and the world creeps in to where it otherwise wouldn't even be there. And then others with that cultural bias just read right past it as though, oh yeah, I understand what that is, and push it into the meaning of the greater text that had no provision or idea that that conceptualization would exist. When we in the West look at a meditating monk from millennia ago, we have a mental idea of what it is to do that. But our mental idea comes from our Western mind and our Western rhetoric and things we've read and words we've attached to what that is. That doesn't mean we understand what that is. It means we have a path in, but unless we dig deeper into what that actual experience was for that monk, in 500 AD, to get underneath that inculcated bias is very difficult. And this is the wisdom of Shakyamuni, if not impossible, by the way, the wisdom of Shakyamuni in saying that we need to study broadly. Because what he was acknowledging is that you can read the 84,000 teachings and still not understand a word of it, because by reading all of it, the goal isn't to accrue all of these boxes of information. It's to open up those boxes and through our own bias, be able to dig past our bias to an insight, an aha moment that unwraps those boxes and goes, oh, I need to adjust this rhetoric, this kind of thinking that I've had about what I thought I was reading, what I thought I was visualizing, is a completely different thing than what my cultural bias, my language bias, has been kind of feeding me, right? My epistemology is incorrect. My built up store of boxes needs to be reevaluated. I need to throw some things out. And then I start to get insight, so that I can make greater realizations about what I thought I was experiencing, but now wholly understand with a different worldview, a different perception. It's a huge, huge obstacle in study. This bias, this inculcated cultural, religious, whatever bias, it prevents us from seeing what, here's one of those words, truth. Truth means something different for everyone who says it, whenever they say it. So here's a thought. When you think of truth, don't think of it as a box of good versus a room full of not good. Rather, think of truth as a clarity of mind that sees actuality rather than a box, rather than anything in a box, because truth is of our own making in our own mind. And that's a separation of the first degree. The truth in our mind, does it match up with, is it equal to the empirical fact around us? Does our perception match our experience, is our perception match the method, the totality of what is actually happening? Or is it a version based on our boxes of epistemology of what is happening? Because those are two truths, right? There's a samsaric truth that's based on the body, right? The physical. And then there's a transcendent mental truth that sees the process of truth, the process of how this individuation begins, how it instantiates in the first place. Do you see the difference? It's kind of like a fish perceiving that it's in water, that it lives in water. It's very, very difficult for the fish to understand what the fish looks like in water because it's in it. But if the fish were able to develop a mind of standing outside the aquarium and see the fish, the water, and the container, and how all of those elements came to be, that would be a very different perception. And this is in essence what we're doing in our Buddhist practice. We are in human form, which provides us the ability to see mentally, not just visually, what we're in. But to transcend that experience of what we're in, and certainly as we study, we clarify that. We come to a lot of personal truths. You might say personal truths are moments of insight. We start to peer at the aquarium. But beyond that, in our Buddha mind, we can observe the process that leads to all of that. Pre-water, pre-aquarium, pre-fish. What does all of this construct? What does all this construction mean? What is it useful to know about? How can I make that construction transparent as an experience? That's a Buddha mind, right? That's the kind of clarity we get from awakening, enlightenment. Enlightenment isn't an enlightened being. It's an enlightenment of what it is to be. It's a constantly a struggle of body-mind, right? And Buddha is an unattached mind. It doesn't throw away the body. It just sees it in the process of life, of minding. Does that make sense? So, back to Earth. Study is a challenge, not only to find good information, scholarship, but to be able to see past the individual words which contain in them this inculcated bias. In the very act of study, we are confronting our own samsaric biases. Language. I still can't remember his name right now. That's so frustrating. I'm getting old, folks. William Burroughs famously said at some point in his career, language is a virus from outer space. That's an entertaining thought. It's a profound one. How do we derive meaning in life? Language seems to be our most sophisticated tool as human beings, which is no doubt why we end up chanting the title of the Myoho Rengekyo. But we can attach, we can epistemologize that to encompass this unbiased, purified experience of life. The only way we can do that is with this samsaric brain of distinctions and manipulations. So that's quite an obstacle. And yet, we can do it. That in itself is quite amazing. But there's a lot of moving parts. And the title of this video is because I'm making an analogy that when we stop our diligent awareness, our single-minded desire to Buddha, to realize, our brain is asleep, just tumbling through life, waiting for something to request of us, something to do. To be a Buddhist is to be pushing forward our perception, our analysis, our constant I don't know if analysis is a large enough word. Our constant, it's a battle. It's an awakening. It's a dissection. And yet, it leads to pushing away from all of that. It's a constant desire using a samsaric mechanism. Our constant craving to recognize, to witness our samsaric mind in action. Oh, look, you're craving this. Oh my goodness, it didn't take much for that to. What is in the forefront of my mind right now? And how do I dissect it? Do I allay it? Do I not negate it, but see through it? See its formation. Like when you see your first child get up and walk, somehow that child has figured out over the months of trial and error that it could suddenly, whoop. Is it emulating you and I? Is it emulating its brothers and sisters? Is it just trying to be more mobile? What's going on with that child when it finally walks? To look at our own lives that way, it's quite an effort. And that is the effort and the courage of Buddhist practice. And when we deal with language, we must be vigilant. That every time we read something, we sit back and go, I think I know what that means. And then stop and think, why do I think I know what that means? How do I think I know what that means? What does that mean? And if I look through what I've just read and I pick out the things that I'm too comfortable with that maybe don't mean what I think they mean, do I start to see a deeper construct? If you're throwing words around like faith and worship and blessings and so forth, stop and try to realize, what are these words trying to tell me? Because these words were used by somebody else to reference what they think, but they don't necessarily represent what Shakyamuni thought, nor what he said. It's gone through thousands of years of manipulation in different languages and different cultures and arrived in my lap as a set of words that were trying to say something. What if you were trying to talk right now to somebody who only spoke Pali? How would you two communicate? And to a degree, I think that's the way we need to read these texts. Like they're really trying to tell us something, but they're using words that they think we're familiar with. But the words we think we're familiar with mean something completely different than to the to those same words to people who don't have that cultural experience. They're just using words they think are convenient for us, but those words are exactly what we've been struggling with in the wrong way with our own experience of life. They're inculcated, misguided thoughts. They're wrong. And to use those wrong words to explain something completely different, there's no end of confusion. And this is my greatest impetus to do these videos, to have this channel, to rewrite these books, with trying to strip this inculcated epistemology of the West, to try to unearth a clearer view of what was actually meant by Shakyamuni's teachings, free of shoving Western thoughts into it. Let it speak for itself, albeit using more Western words, but words with less charisma, less attached meaning. So that's the important thing. What choice do we have as Westerners? We're going to read Western languages. And even if we endeavor to learn Japanese or Chinese or ancient Chinese or even Pali or Sanskrit, we will then become obsessed with language instead of meaning. And there's also great admonition from Shakyamuni about that. The most important thing is to constantly be aware that you're reading or studying, whatever language it's in, an attempt at communicating something that can hardly be communicated. It only can be experienced. And again, we go back to Shakyamuni. The enlightenment, the understandings of Buddha can only be understood amongst Buddhas. So how do I get to Buddha? So all of this information, the sermons, whatever language, though I can endeavor all my life to remove the obstacles of language that might be in the way of your insights, my understanding, ultimately, the goal is to transcend the words and try to understand what is being uncovered, what is being described. And then we each will find our own path into that realization, that awakening. That's our goal. That's what's important. So as much as I talk about language, I don't want to be misunderstood as unduly fetishizing language or the words. It should be foremost in our understanding as we dig through the words, and that's what we should be doing, is digging to find meaning that's relevant to us without the imposition of incorrect biases. Not an easy task, I realize, but I don't want to create a bunch of experts, or create, that's a pretty big word, but I don't want to influence you to obsess about the words. But I do want you to be aware of the words you're reading and how they may be gluing your understanding inappropriately. You need to look for the meaning beneath the words. The words are just a road sign, and the wind and the weather and mischief can deal with road signs in unimaginable manners. So be aware of the road signals, the road signs, but understand that the road signs aren't your practice. The destination is Buddha. And in these words, people are struggling to describe what that path looks like. So you have your own epistemology to worry about. You have the epistemology of those who wrote those words to work. You don't need to become an expert linguist. What you need to do is be aware that language is an obstacle and that you must see beneath it to what is the essential story here. Anyway, I suppose I've rambled on enough about that, but it's come up a lot lately, as it does from time to time. So I thought I hadn't focused my thinking on that for a while. So that's what this video is for. I hope it helps you study with a more open mind, if that makes sense. Look for your own solutions without your own biases. I don't know. Again, this is the fallacy of words. I think you may understand what I'm going to have confidence that you understand what I'm talking about. And confidence in your practice, I always have. Sooner or later, it all makes sense. I just like to get there quicker. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. Thanks for being here. And I'll see you in the next video. Bye-bye.